Welcome to the Southern Ground Podcast, provided by Alabama Extension through Auburn University. Extension educators Shane Harris and Dr. Chip East discuss seasonal lawn and garden topics, address common questions, and provide the practical solutions you want to know. Let's dig into our Southern Ground.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Southern Ground. I'm Shane Harris with the Alabama Cooperative Extension System. And across from me is Dr. Chip East, also a fellow horticulturist. Hello, Chip.
Hey, Shane. Good to be with you today for another episode of Southern Ground.
Chip, what we got on the table today?
I'm excited about this episode today because we're talking about wildlife plantings. And we've got Kyle Marable with us from here at the...
From Elk City.
Alabama Cooperative Extension System. And he's local here in Elk City, not far from where we're recording today.
Good to see you, Kyle.
Good to see y'all. Thank y'all for having me here.
We're going to talk about a topic that's sort of popular, especially for the hunters, those outdoor enthusiasts that want to begin to track that big deer, that big buck, and that's planting the green field. That seems to be always a southern, at least here in Alabama, a southern tradition. We've got to plant the green field, and we want to talk about not only that process, but in this case, how to be successful, because everybody wants that big buck, Chip, to come on the green field while we're doing the hunting season, and so that field's got to be planted correctly.
Hey, we're not there wasting time, Kyle. We're there to get that big deer.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk to you today, we want to guarantee that we're gonna have some good meat coming off into our freezer this winter just because of this episode today, right?
Not making any guarantees. We can talk about it, but we can't make the deer show up.
Let's start with why and what is a green field. So talk about that supplemental feeding that we see being done in the fall.
All right. Yeah. It's important to think about when you're thinking about a green field, you want to think about why are you doing that green field, or food plot, whatever you want to call it. Because if you're doing it for nutrition, are you doing it for hunting, recreation, what's your purpose, what's your reasoning for that exact green field or your green field plan? Because that's going to affect why you do it, it's going to affect where you do it, it's going to affect how much you put in food plot, it may even affect whether or not you want a food plot or not. So looking at your overall management objectives and then also looking at what's your objectives with that food plot. Because a food plot is not going to be wildlife habitat. Wildlife habitat is going to be, the natural stuff. It's going to be the plants. It's going to be kind of working on that environmental element of it. The food plot part of it is going to be something in addition to that. So in most cases, it's going to be important to focus on that habitat creation first and then move on to the food plots. With that said, certain situations like maybe leased land, small acreage, recreational use may have it to where your primary goal or just, doing a food plot is more of a priority than your other management. But it's going to be a case-by-case scenario, and it's something that, talking it over with an extension agent like me or another wildlife biologist or something like that could be a good idea if you have questions about that sort of thing.
From a hunter standpoint, traditionally it's always been as an attractant. We're trying to attract the deer to an area that we're hunting on a piece of property. We're trying to bring those deer in closer so that we can see them. So it would be compared to putting a bird feeder out in the backyard, we're trying to bring them into a particular area.
Yes, I agree. And that is probably really what we're going to focus on today. But just kind of when you're thinking about it overall and you're trying to start before you even, put a disc in the ground or, seed in the ground or whatever, just making sure you have the right approach to why you're doing it. And knowing in this case that we're talking about the hunting aspect of it, we want to attract, probably going to talk about deer today, I think, but we're going to, but why, what's your purpose in trying to get that hunter side of it? And so we'll talk about that mostly, but the other sides come into effect as well, if that's something that is maybe more of an interest to our non-hunters or somebody who's, maybe they're a hunter, but they're less interested in hunting over a food plot.
So, Kyle, if we're interested in deer only, but we could be planting food plots for other animals, but today we're just going to talk about deer only. How far would a deer travel to get to a well-managed food plot?
I think that's going to depend a lot on, I don't have a solid answer for you. I think it's going to depend a lot on what's between that deer and that food plot. Do you have a lot of well-managed habitat between wherever the deer is, located to that food plot? Do you have other food plots available? What time of your season is it? So what other aspects are driving that movement? So it's hard to say for sure.
Okay.
I'm not confident giving you a good answer on that one.
So thinking about the food plot then, the size of the food plot, and then is it better to have two food plots that are an acre in size, or five food plots that are a tenth acre, or 20 food plots, or smaller ones or larger ones? What's the goal? How far apart should one be from another?
This goes back to kind of the factor of, when you're talking about your overall management goals, how much acreage do you have? So you don't really want to put too much of your acreage. So over 10% would probably be too much of your property, especially for, decent size, several hundred acres plus properties, would probably be too much in food plot. We look at it and say, who all is using it? Are you looking at it? Are you saying, how many people are going to be hunting this property? How many hunters am I trying to accommodate? So if you have a small to medium-sized property and you're trying to accommodate multiple hunters, and your primary focus of method of hunting is over a food plot, then you probably want to have smaller food plots that are spread out, so that you can get access to those at the same time. Now, on the other side of that is you don't want them too small. So, maybe you can do a smaller food plot if that's what you have available for, like, say, bow hunting, or keeping your shots close by, or just don't have a whole lot of space overall. But when you want to think about size, is you want to think about being able to get sunlight on the ground. So if you're trying to fit a food plot in a forested area and it's constantly shaded, it's not big enough to get sunlight on the ground, you probably need to go a little bit bigger.
Does shape matter when you're designing this greenfield or food plot? Because we see lots of different variations, and sometimes the land or the open spot may dictate that shape, but is there an ideal textbook shape? They don't care what size it is or shape it is.
I think the only time that shape is going to become a really important factor, is going to be like if you get to a really big food plot. If you're getting to where, the deer are having to walk several hundred yards across an open food plot to get from one place to the other, they may be less likely to use that center part. I would keep the shape square is usually easy to plant, so that's perfectly fine. But you can also get as whatever the landscape dictates. As long as you're getting enough sunlight in the ground for it to grow, and you're not creating too big of a space for them to not want to cross an area. And if you have something like that, you can make some landscape adjustments and provide some cover in different ways. But I would say look at your surrounding, you're putting in a feet next to a field, or are you putting it next to some trees, open forest, closed forest kind of deal, and kind of make adjustments as to how far they're going. Also, if you're starting out with a new food plot, you can always make it bigger. Or if you've got one and you put it in and it's like, okay, that's too big, you can always plant less next year. So you can kind of adapt.
Chip, as hunters, we always try to find the ideal spot to hunt. And a lot of times those green fields are already been planted. They're already in a particular location. But it's a lot of people like those bottom lands. Sometimes they like them up on the ridge. Does location matter in this case?
That was going to be my question for Kyle. If I have an open spot, and I'm not cutting any trees, it's just an open spot on top of a hill, and I've got an open spot next to a stream in a lower area, I think about the lower area, maybe if you're in a drought when you're trying to plant them, I might have more moisture in the ground. But as far as the deer is concerned, does it matter if I'm on a hill or a lower area?
Probably not overall. It may for that individual property. So this is going to go back to looking at your property. You know, what if you've, especially if you've owned your property, if you hunted your property a good bit, then you probably have a decent idea of how they move normally. So you can make some adjustments according to that. But if you're new to the property, or if you're just trying to say, where's a good spot, I'd look at what's around it. So what other habitat, like I discussed, what other habitat types, what other habitat needs are being met with the surrounding area, and then potentially decide what you want to plant, how big you want to plant it, and where you want to plant it based off of that.
So if I had a good cover, brushy type growth all the way around a spot, that would be a good food plot. But if it was thinned trees and it had been burned recently, I don't know, and it's, you can see 100 yards through there, that might not be a good place.
I would say more along the lines of, let's say you have a five-year, you know, you're looking at it and you got a really young, dense pine loblolly stand. Not much happening in that, right? They'll probably pass through it, but not much else happening. But you've got an area open, fire-managed, pine stand, kind of like you were talking about. I'd be more apt to put the food plot near that open, well-managed stand than I would be near that dense one, because they're already probably over there using that open forest, that well-managed, or even like a cutover or something. They're already probably using that. Having it in that area gives them a reason to be like, hey, we're over here doing what we're supposed to be doing. Let's swing by and check out that food plot. Versus if it's over there by itself in the middle of 200 acres of 10-year-old loblolly pine, there's not a whole lot of reason for that deer to be over there other than your food plot. Now, like I said, especially if you lease, if you're doing multi-management, there's a lot of reasons that we own land and a lot of reasons we use land. If that's what you got, then we can work with that. But if you have the choice, trying to put it, maybe between kind of a, where it's bridging a gap between that dense, unmanaged or poorly managed section or versus the good.
What you're saying there is to look at the layout of the land, how the deer would naturally move from one area to the other if they're going from cover bedding areas to a natural feeding area back and forth, is put it in the middle or nearby from a normal pattern of movement.
Yes. Trying to work along that normal movement, trying to see what other reasons they have to be in that area. Because if they don't have a whole lot of reason to be somewhere, then one, they may be less likely to find your food plot. But if they do, they're also being exposed to more predators, or they're being exposed to just more energy use, trying to get from one, the elements and whatever else, just to get from wherever they're bedding, wherever they're normally living, over to your food plot and back. So trying to reduce that need to go long distances.
Well, Kyle, so we've decided where we're going to put our food plot. We've decided how large it is, that sort of thing. What are the steps we have to take before we actually plant the plot?
And this is going to be probably the most important part of our discussion. Outside of why are you planting it, making sure you plant it correctly is going to be the most important part. And so the first thing you want to do is do a soil test. Y'all have probably discussed soil tests on this podcast before, but if you're doing food plots, make sure, depending on how big that, food plot's going to be, make sure you get some samples from, random samples from across your food plot. Make sure you get a good sample size for that. Ideally, you want to take a sample from each individual food plot. That's not necessarily what everybody always does, but ideally that's what you should be doing. And so you do that soil test, and when you do that, you say, hey, we have a tendency just to put like food plot or green field or something when you submit it to get a soil test. Actually tell them what you're planning to plant. You know, so whatever you're actually planning to plant or wanting to plant, put that down as the crop, because that way they can tweak it even more if they need to. Now, with that in mind, keep in mind, you know, if you're going to put something like a clover or some kind of other nitrogen fixer, they may end up recommending less nitrogen. So you may or may not want to include that initially in the mix. But if you're going to do something like wheat or oats or something like that, then just put that in there other than just food plot. So you want to do that food plot, I mean, do that soil test first. And then once you get that results back, that's where you can really start kind of hammering out how to do it. The lime is going to be the most important part of this process. You know, we have most of the state of Alabama, we're going to have really acidic soils. So we're going to probably need, in most cases, 1 to 2 tons per acre. Look at your soil test, go off of that, not just some random person off the podcast here. But that's typically what it's going to be. So once you've done that, ideally you'd want to lime at least 6 months before you're going to plant. You know, how often do we think about that deer food plots 6 months before we're going to plant them? Rarely. So if you have to lime right before you plant, it's better than nothing. But ideally 6 months at least before you do it, so it has time to activate and get integrated into the soil.
And we've talked about taking soil test on a previous episode, Chip. Our earlier episode for the year was it starts with the soil, and we get deep into fertility, pH, and taking a soil test. What you're describing here, Kyle, is changing the pH, raising the pH for most of our acidic soil so that it's ideal. So let's talk a little bit about getting that pH correct and the ideal range for a greenfield or food plot.
What Kyle's describing is the same thing we would do if we were planting a garden. Same exact soil test. We gather our samples. We write down on there's a paper that comes with it, crop to be grown, and we're going to write, and you'll talk about it later, but whether it be wheat or oats or it could be a corn if in the summertime, I don't know, whatever we're planting, the soil lab will send a report back of how to fertilize that specific crop. We know what the plants need. The soil test is just analyzes your soil to see what you've got so we can fertilize the difference. And we recommend that every day of the week. I'm glad you mentioned it here because it's so important. I've heard of deer, Kyle, someone having more than one food plot and the pH right in one food plot and not in another. And he can see it in the animals that come to eat.
Yeah, and we've talked with hunters. We get this kind of question. Put your money and time and effort in the soil test, in the lime, in the pH, because that's going to dictate anything else that you do when it comes to being successful, including what fertilizer to use, how much fertilizer to put out, and the success of the crop that you're growing.
Exactly. And that's what I was going to get to this in a minute, but we'll go ahead and hit it right here since we're discussing it. Deer are what's called opportunistic browsers. And so they don't go out and just mow down everything in front of them. They have the ability to tell how palatable, how nutritional plants are. So they're going to go out and they're going to walk through that field or walk through that forest or whatever they're in, and they're going to pick out the ideal foods for that moment. And now what's ideal this week may not be the same as next week. Or they may eat all of what's ideal and have to go to secondary. But they're going to pick what's best at that moment in time when they go through there.
Go a little deeper, because I find that interesting what you're describing. And we talk to gardeners, homeowners, where they go out there and they'll eat a bite of this and eat a bite of that. So how are they analyzing it? How do they know that? Is it just because it's green, just because it's pretty? Is it based on taste? How do they know that?
I am sure that there's some research out there that better answers this question than me. But, I mean, you know, first of all, you know, how palatable is it? Is going to, you know, if it's something that is fresh and green and new, it's likely going to taste better, be easier to chew, and also likely going to be more nutritional. I don't know exactly. I'm sure the research is there, but I don't actually know myself exactly how they tell, but they absolutely, you know, we see all of the list of ideal deer plants. you know, tiers of quality of deer plants. And there's some truth to some, you know, a lot of those, but also you got to look at, like I said, seasonal, and you got to look at, you know, what sites it on. Kind of like was mentioned here, if it's limed, or if what we're going to do talk about in just a minute, fertilized, all of that is absorbed by the plant and grows better, so it's going to have better nutrition, and the deer will absolutely, you know, just instinctually know that they can pick and choose. And that's where those different foods, especially if you're talking on the native stuff, having that seasonal variety, having that options to where, okay, this grows and does better this time of the year, this grows and does better this time of the year. And so they can go out there and have a preferred food source at different times and not say, okay, this is the, and this goes to kind of the food plot side of things as well. We're going to put everything in one plant, one situation, and bank on that to do what you want it to do. It may work, it may not. You know, so that's where some of the pitfalls of food plots.
It's always based on the availability of other food. And we have issues with deer in the landscape. It's a lot of times they're hungry, they're looking for something. They're, like you said, they're opportunists. They're looking to browse. But it's always interesting, Chip, to see that they're drawn to the white oak acorns, or they're going after the mushrooms, or they're eating the greenbriars, or they're eating your pansies in your landscape. It's always interesting to know, what are they eating, what are they drawn to? And that's always the question that hunters want to know, what to plant, what is that magic plant that I can put out there to guarantee that big buck's going to come out there during the hunting season?
We had a couple of camellias in our yard, Shane, and we had a lot of camellias in the yard, but these two that was planted, and I say they were just planted closer to the fence, closer to the edge of the yard, and that's where the deer's coming from, they would eat those down, and I thought, they're going to die. They're just not going to grow. But they wouldn't eat the other camellia 20 feet away. But they would eat these two. Now, what was special about those two, I don't know. But eventually, that did overcome it, and the deer don't even come to them anymore. But when they were young, I thought, they're going to die because of these deer.
I was hoping Kyle would have that magic plant, especially for hunters, that he would guarantee that deer is going to do that. But deer just don't work that way. But they do naturally know or are drawn to wherever that supplemental feeding or food opportunities are there.
So we don't have this is the 10-point buck plant, and this is the 8-point. And
that's what they put on the bag, the 10-point buck, and this is the big buck mix or whatever, guaranteed. So
we're not going to plant the little buck mix. We always plant the big buck mix.
So we'll discuss planting, what to plant here in a minute. But there is at least one more step before we get from liming and soil test and liming to what to plant. What's your question, Chip?
I'm going back to liming. And all. Well, you can buy pelletized lime. You can buy the ground limestone. It's hard to spread that ground limestone. I know people that spread it by hand, and you can do that with a shovel, but it's the bigger the food plot, the harder that is. Sometimes it's hard to get a spreader truck into where these food plots are, and sometimes they won't even come because it's such a small area. We may be stuck spreading by hand. But they do make drop spreaders that will spread the ground limestone. But the pelletized lime is what a lot of hunters would do because it would go in some of these cyclone tractor-type spreaders that the farmers used to, and it's easier to spread. And it does cost more money than the what we call the ag lime. But what are you seeing more hunters apply?
Ideally, if you can get the ag lime, whether that's they come spread it for you or you have the capability of spreading it, that is going to be a significantly cheaper option. So if you have a lot of food plots, you have they're accessible, you have that ability to do that, that's probably the route you should take. But like you said, there's a lot of people who can't. So,
and going back to where we put this food plot on our property, a place where that a spreader truck can get to has a lot to do with it as well.
Yeah, and there's a lot. I've talked with a bunch of landowners and people who, like you said, they're just not going to come do it for whatever reason, they can't access it, there's not enough, they dealing with bigger acreages with farmers or whatever. So going to the pelletized lime works very well. It's just, it actually is talking about that 6 month, it actually absorbs more quickly. So there's a lot of advantages to it, but it is costly. That's really the biggest issue, is just significantly more cost. But if you can get, you know, a small food plot that's hard to get to, it's a great way of doing it.
And we're not talking about spreading over thousands of acres. We're just talking about a few.
Yeah, like we're saying, that lime and those, that pelletized lime and those hard to get, smaller things, great options. Once you've got the lime, which is absolutely the number one step to a good, like if you do nothing else to get a good food plot, lime. After that, you look at that soil test results and you look at what it recommends for your fertilizer. You know, it's one of those, again, it's one of those things where ideally you do the math or you get one of us to help you do the math. You apply what the what it recommends to apply, so you don't waste, don't put too little out, don't put not enough out on the fertilizer. So that's a, you know, that's kind of a case-by-case, yours is going to be unique to you kind of situation, so we won't go too deep on that. Because like we talked about with the nature of how deer eat and how they're able to determine plant quality, if you do those two things, if you lime and then you fertilize, and you can fertilize like at time of planting, you know, kind of right around that same time. But if you do those two things, it almost doesn't matter what you plant. Because like you were talking about Chip, with they were eating those two camellias and not the others, they're going to come eat whatever grows out there because it's going to be nutritionally better.
That's a big statement you just made. It doesn't matter. So, and we'll talk about a few preferences to plant for green plants, but I think what you just said is very, very important for our listeners. It doesn't matter so much as long as you take care of the fertility side first.
You get the soil right, and then, like I said, there might be some, you know, you want to make sure there's some palatable plants out there, but in within reason there, it's almost doesn't matter. So for that reason, when we talk about what to plant, you know, he's talking about the big buck mixes this and whatever. I usually recommend to keep it very simple. You can go, you can buy one of those fancy mixes, and you can have, a lot of them will have a, you know, I just said just a minute ago, don't put your all your, you know, hope in one or two, you know, one plant. And then I'm fixing to kind of go against that. But those big, those mixes are going to have a whole bunch of stuff in there. But the reality is, if you've done the liming, you've done the fertilizing, just keep it simple. And I usually recommend a mixture of wheat, oats, substitute one of those for cereal rye. What that does is that gives you, you know, something that will come up pretty easily. There's usually not a whole lot of difficulty to get those to come up. It gives you, by having, you know, especially wheat and oats, you'll have the wheat that usually comes up a little bit first, and then the oats that will kind of last a little bit longer, so you can kind of run through the whole season a little bit better. And they're usually cheap. Like, you don't have to go buy the really expensive mix. You can just go to whatever seed store you have and make sure you get, you know, what, see what kind of just generic wheat they've got. Onless, if you take the wheat route, onless wheat would be preferred over because it's more palatable. But other than that, you know, just keeping it simple. If you really want to throw a little something extra in there, a clover could be mixed in as well. And that's a good option if you're kind of wanting to drag it into on in the spring, on in the summer. You can put a clover mix in that. And that kind of depends on how wet it is, how dry it is, how much sun, shade, whatever, as to which one you pick.
Cereal rye, wheat, and oats, and you mentioned clover, but crimson clover or another clover?
A lot of times would be a white clover, maybe a red, maybe a Clemson, but it just kind of mostly depends on the site as to what you choose clover-wise.
But those are cool season crops. We would plant those what time of year, Kyle?
So most of this planting is going to be done in September through October. Weather plays a big factor into that. You know, are we in the middle of a drought? How moist is the soil? But most of – and Alabama is pretty mild winter, so you can get away pushing it back a little bit if you have to. But usually sometime in that September to October range.
Name two or three warm season plants that we could plant later on the spring.
So, you know, it kind of depends, again, back on your goals. And I won't go into a whole lot of detail on my opinions on warm season food plots. There's clovers, there's warm season clovers that are good options. There's also a lot of your stuff like cowpeas and different kinds of legumes that you'd plant. So you're really going to focus on the high protein plants if you're going for something that is a growing season summertime food plot.
Any kind of a bean or pea?
Beans and peas kind of typically. There's some that's going to do better. I would check your site. But those are going to be typical, those high protein legumes.
I've grown sun hemp. It grows tall.
Yeah, so it just kind of depends some. But yeah, those are all be options for those warm season. If we're looking at doing food plots in the winter, we're looking more at energy. So we're providing the nutritional need for winter, even in Alabama where it's pretty mild, is going to be energy. Whereas if you're looking at like a summer food plot, you're looking at protein primarily, because that's when you have antler growth, that's when you have lactating females, and so that is the main need for that time of year.
Kyle, we have these food plots and animals are coming to them. Do you see more predators coming to the food plots? They're doing a little hunting too. Do we see any predator go up or down in population around a food plot?
That's going to be another one of those very site-specific things. But when you make a food plot, it is important to keep that in mind. So make sure that there's good access in and out from multiple directions on a food plot. Don't make it to where there's only really one way in, one way out, because, you know, whether predators are a problem or not on your property, if you make it easy for them, it absolutely could be an issue. And then I also recommend exclusion cages too. For like, so you take some like chicken wire, something, you know, like that, make a little small little just cage cylinder that you can set out in the middle of your field. And that gives you instant feedback as to how well that's growing and how much it's being used by deer. So if it's look out there and it's really tall in that exclusion cage and really short everywhere else, it's get eaten a lot. If it's really tall across the board, it's not. If it's really short across the board, didn't grow well. So you get that instant feedback of what's going on.
That's good advice. That helps us know what to do differently the next year.
Kyle, we thank you so much for being on another episode of Southern Ground. This has been very valuable information. Our time has gotten away from us again, Chip, and these discussions always seem to go a little longer than we like, but it's such great information. If you need help on planting a green field or a food plot or other supplemental plantings for wildlife or any kind of gardening or farming questions, be sure to reach out to us, extension agents and specialists through the Alabama Cooperative Extension System. These publications and literature and information is on our website at aces.edu. That's www.aces.edu. And you can find there and get more information, videos, literature, publications, advice on anything that you're trying to grow. So, Chip, another good day on, hey, there's no reason why we shouldn't have a big buck on our green fields this fall.
Absolutely, Shane. Good to be here with you today. Kyle, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you all for having me.
We appreciate everybody listening to another episode of Southern Ground.
Southern Ground has been a production of Alabama Extension at Auburn University.